What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam Kalal, and we are Atlanta Zone. Two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports, the wacky-ass hijinks, and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
It is going excellent, Graham.
Excellent.
Excellent, yes. Wow. I've worked quite a number of days in a row, and I'm taking tomorrow off.
Very fair.
So it's like my Saturday night, and I can think of no better way to spend it than talking sports with you.
Oh, I'm humbled.
Yeah, and watching the Braves game, of course.
Right.
So,
very fair.
What's happening with you?
Oh, recovering a little bit from yesterday. Did some quality drinking during the Falcons victory.
Mm-hmm.
And then also loved watching the Patriots lose to the Jaguars. and
when, I do hope you weren't a jerk to intern Jared.
I don't think I was a jerk to intern Jared. I think we just watched it, and I thought about a lot of dark things about the Patriots, but I don't think I vocalized them. Then again,
yeah, once that, I definitely thought they were going to come back and win that game.
I mean, they definitely could have, but it was good to see the Patriots lose and the Falcons win.
Can't ask for much more than that.
Right. And the Saints almost lose to the freaking Browns, which is hilarious.
That Browns game gets a little scarier for us, though. Those Browns look halfway decent.
Yeah, no, they're pushing people. I mean, I know that first game was, you know, a big slogfest in terms of the rain with the Steelers, but I mean,
also I don't think the Steelers are good.
Maybe not, but they took the Saints to the wire in the Superdome, which not a lot of teams can do, and held their offense. So, but Adam, we are an Atlanta professional sports podcast, so let's we got to get back on the train there. We almost got into some national.
That's a good point, Graham. Yeah. That's a good point. You can just cut all that out if you want to.
We can't stray too far from the path.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Atlanta professional sports. So we got what do we got? We got the Falcons.
We got Falcons.
We got the Braves.
We got the Braves.
The Hawks.
Nothing going on with the Hawks. About a month.
But we have them as a team.
We have them. Yes.
Right.
We do have them.
Atlanta United.
Indeed.
Is that all we got?
You got the Atlanta Dream, who just lost in
their season is over.
WNBA Eastern Conference Finals, true to Atlanta.
They were playing at McCamish Pavilion.
Yeah, that's their home.
With the renovations of Phillips. Have we talked about the fact that all of last year, you and I thought that those renovations were already done at Phillips?
I thought there was too. And now everybody's talking about it again like it's happening now. And I thought it already happened.
It makes it very obvious that we never actually went to a game.
No,
last
but
year.
I could have sworn they kept saying this is all available now. And now everybody's making a big deal out of the.
Well, now it actually is happening.
Right, the courtside bar. And I was like, wasn't this fucking shit here last year? What are you guys talking about?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
No.
But now it will be.
But now it's the barbershop.
Barbershop.
Courtside bar.
Top golf.
Your top golf experience.
Which that's still dumb.
I agree. Here, watch a basketball game for Christ's sake. If I'm going to play Topgolf,
go to Topgolf. Yeah,
yeah, doesn't make any sense. It's also going to be a bastardized version. It's not like you're going to be hitting balls into wide open field or playing the zone game or something. It's probably some digital virtual reality bullshit.
Oh no, it is.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah, it's like when you would go to Dick's Sporting Goods back in the early 2000s and they had their little golf simulator.
Right,
that's exactly what it is.
Jesus. So I'm going to pay an extra $200 so I can do that. It makes sense.
Yep, to some people it does.
Well, we got a big show, I think. We got lots of Falcons news to talk about. We can also check in on my mental state, continue that, as we did in the last episode. Make sure the Falcons aren't slowly killing me or I'm allowing them to kill me.
Right.
And then we'll circle back to the Braves. But since we're in football mode, Adam, football season, let's start with these Atlanta Falcons. So, yeah, yesterday Falcons win 31-24 over the Panthers. Yes, you heard that right. 31 points were scored by this supposedly anemic offense that we all wanted to
murder.
Yeah, murder and burn at the stake last week. 31-24 over the Panthers and a very sound victory for the Falcons. And it was great, too, because of all those injuries on defense. Keanu Neal, Deion Jones, losing those two huge pieces. And eventually, unfortunately, the ejection of DeMonte Casey. The offense really needed to put the team on its back this week and support the defense in their time of need, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I was so stoked with that first red zone attempt when Calvin Ridley made that touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was just a sign like, okay, guys, we're good.
Right.
We're still able to spread the ball out to other receivers and not just force it to Julio. Like we said last week, everyone needed to relax.
Yep.
So, I mean, Calvin really getting involved, Hooper with his touchdown, beautiful pass by Matt, and then Matt just taking himself a couple times. It was
Yeah, four.
Awesome to see.
Four total touchdowns for Matt Ryan, 23 of 28 for 272, 116 quarterback rating. Yeah, he played like an MVP yesterday. Yeah, that bad pick, but he was screaming at Hooper. Apparently Hooper missed an assignment. But other than that, he was on the money. And the one thing that was really impressive was the amount of time he had to make these plays. Panthers got zero sacks on Matt yesterday. And the Panthers front seven is quite formidable. You got Poe, you got Luke Kuechly. I know Thomas Davis is not playing right now, but even still, big step forward in terms of, you know, you're facing two very formidable front sevens in your first two games. You get kind of hosed by the first one of the Eagles. But this game, offensive line did their job.
Yeah, I believe I actually pointed that out to you during the game, and you said the offensive line was, quote, nasty.
Yeah, they were getting physical. Yeah. It didn't feel like a finesse, sort of this finesse approach where we're just kind of like blocking guys just by touching them. It's like we were pushing people over. Yeah. Hooper had a great block in the game. I think against Kuechly on a pass to Ridley, which was really nice to see. And I think most of Sanu did as well. But looked like a completely different team offensively. There were shades of that 2016 Shanny offense going.
Well, I mean, it was just there. I mean, the balance, like I already said, the balance was there with running the ball as well,
yes.
Which they didn't do it at all last week. I mean, it's the thing. Like, even if you're not having success running, you have to still keep trying.
Right. And yeah, the balance was great. And something we didn't report on last week, only because it happened after we recorded the show, was Devontae Freeman was out. A lot of reports are coming out saying he's going to be, you know, missing the next 2 to 3 games. So naturally, I mean, even though you have a lot of faith.
What's his injury?
Yeah, apparently the injury is to his knee. So I think it's that same knee where he's having the PCL, ACL issues from last year that slowed him, particularly in the postseason. So, but going into that game, even though, you know, you have faith in Tevin Coleman, we know what he can do when he takes over as the lead back, and he's the guy leading the charge from the backfield. But you're still going up against this brutal, brutal Panthers front seven, which had not allowed a 100-yard rusher for 22 consecutive games until yesterday.
Yeah, that's a pretty unbelievable stat.
So, of course, Tevin Coleman goes out only on 16 carries. Only had 16 carries to get 107 yards. Hell of a game for him. Also had some nice catches. I was equally impressed with Ito Smith. Being the spell back, 9 carries for 46 yards. Excellent job.
He's the rookie out of Southern Miss, I believe.
I believe so.
Fourth round pick this year.
A little over 5 yards a carry, so tremendous effort. He had one play in the third quarter, which I spilled my drink recreating when I was doing a performance of it, because I think you had missed it.
Yeah, I missed it, and then you tried to describe it to me and didn't really do it justice.
No, I'll try to do a better job this time. So he gets the ball. I'm also not drunk, so maybe this will be a little better. He gets the ball in the backfield. Two guys come up on him. He makes the first guy miss with a nice juke, makes the second guy miss with a nice juke, and then has the wherewithal to get up the field and get a first down. He should have been stopped for a 2 or 3 yard loss. Instead, he turns into a first down. He looked fantastic the whole day. And it was really nice to see him come out, because that makes you breathe a little sigh of relief in terms of our running back depth, because you knew Coleman was going to be your workhorse, which is fine, but it's like, after that, what do you got? And it was great to see the rookie produce.
Yeah, especially with, I mean, obviously this is thinking long-term already, but assuming we're definitely not bringing back Coleman next year unless something happens to Devontae.
I mean, we've talked about this a lot, you know.
Oh, yeah, Coleman's my guy.
Yeah, like, I think Devontae,
screwed.
Here's the biggest problem I have with Devontae, is unwillingness to alter his play style in any respect, knowing he's a small back. He's very physical. He's very aggressive. That's what makes him great, is his ability to run up against people and dish out as much punishment as he takes. At the same time, because of his frame, he can't keep doing that and expect to have any sort of longevity in the league. I know running backs aren't built for that anymore. You know, they're done after, you know, 8 years usually or something like that. But he makes no effort to preserve his body. You think about the smaller backs we've had in the past, a la Warwick Dunn, who was able to really ensure that he had a very long career because he didn't take the hit. His game was also built more on elusiveness. But Freeman's physical running, while it is his greatest strength, it's also his greatest detriment. And I feel like it's really starting to cut into his career, where he should be thriving right now in his prime.
And he could still come back and have a good year, but
he could.
I mean, but that's who he is as a runner, though.
But you think
he's not going to be himself. If
a
he
guy
turns that up.
Talented as he is,
but he's talented because of the way that he runs.
Right, but you got to be able to be multifaceted in this game, I think. And the fact that he's not willing to make an adjustment and not be like, yeah, I'm just going to run straight ahead and try to bowl someone over. It's like, I don't know, try to put some more wrinkles into your game. If you don't do that, we're already seeing the effects of what's happening because of that.
Right.
So it's just like, I appreciate Devontae. I love Devontae. I love the way he plays. I love his physical, hard-nosed attitude. But the fact that he's so obstinate that he's not going to make any adjustments to his game and still play the same exact way, even though it's putting him on the bench and he's missing football games and guys are coming for his job now, even though, you know, he has that contract, it's still kind of frustrating.
Yeah, we just got to really run Coleman as much as we can, though.
Okay. Yeah, no, ride him out. You know, get as much out of him this year as you possibly can. Absolutely. Something also to touch on, you mentioned this as well, the equal distribution in the receiving core. You look at this, you know, four catches for 65 yards for Calvin Ridley and a touchdown. Five catches for 64 yards for Julio. Five catches for 59 yards for Hooper.
And so you know what the great thing about that Hooper stat is?
Hmm.
That was in five targets as well.
That's fantastic.
So
very good.
He's making his catches.
Right, he's not dropping balls. And I was very impressed by the receiving corps, especially Calvin Ridley. Very quiet in that opening game against Philly. Had some targets, but only had a drop. Didn't have an official reception. He was destroying that Panther secondary. You look at that too. Four for 65. He's getting a ton of yards after the catch there. And he was just, his speed was out of this world good.
But he's not the same, like, he is a professional route runner.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's the guy that's going to kill you within 10 yards and then get those yards after catch. Mm-hmm. He's not the Julio going to burn you, just run him straight up and throw a bomb to him. That's not who he is.
Right.
Which is a good thing to have a guy like that to counteract Julio.
For sure. It adds another wrinkle to the offense. And it kind of siphoned out most Sanu. He only had two catches for 19 yards. But I think Sanu will get his at some point this year. But knowing, you know, the fact that we remember we drafted a receiver in the first round, and he actually played a pivotal role in this game, was great. And another thing I really enjoyed seeing was just our ability to get open. You know how we talked about that Eagles game where it felt like even when guys were getting open, it's like they're just smothered or it's a struggle for anyone to really get open. Hooper, I remember one catch with Hooper, there wasn't a guy within 10 or 15 yards of him. So clearly we were doing something offensively to throw. And I know their secondary is not nearly as good as the Eagles, but we were getting guys open in space and able to make plays after the catch. I feel like a completely different team yesterday. And I appreciated also there was a little more motion on the line than we're used to seeing in a Sark offense. And he was dialing up some, you know, much better plays. It wasn't as predictable as what we normally see. There wasn't any, I'm banging my head against the wall, we're going to keep calling the same play in the red zone and just hopefully it works, even though it's not. And we see that it's not. I thought the dial-up to Hooper there in the red zone was tremendous. That's something we talked about in our season preview. Can Hooper be an effective target in the red zone? The whole offensive attack was very multifaceted and kept the defense off balance very effectively. And there are a lot more bootlegs, too. A lot more play action. I was thoroughly impressed with the game plan that Sark came up with. I'll give him his credit.
Wow.
You got to be fair. And I think it just felt like, and I don't know how much Matt had to do with that. I don't really care. Either way, Matt and Sark were on the same page in this game.
So what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, and I've been wrong before, Graham,
mm-hmm.
is that Sark's the greatest offensive coordinator the Falcons have ever had?
I will correct you and say no. But I will also say this. And I believe, and we were 4-for-4 in the red zone scoring touchdowns yesterday. No having to settle for field goals, which is great. But I think we never with Shanahan were able to go 4-for-4 in the red zone. So we did something with Sark that we never did with Shanahan, which was cool. And obviously, you know, you got to evaluate it week to week. You never know what's going to happen. We know that the Panthers secondary ain't what it used to be. However, after laying such a fucking egg in that first game, offensively, Matt, Sark, the whole lot of them, minus Julio, offensive line, they came out and just gangbusters yesterday. So hats off to every single member of the offensive unit. They did a great job, and Sarkisian himself.
And, I mean, yeah, on a day that we absolutely needed it with the defense being down a little bit.
Yeah.
100%. That's what we need from our offense here on out.
Yeah, and let's touch on some of the negative aspects of this game. Unfortunately, the injury bug continues to pile up for this team. Dakaris McKinley's hurt. has a groin issue. As we mentioned, Devontae's, you know, going to miss a couple games probably. Andy Levitre got hurt, and Schweitzer came and actually played pretty well for him. And also Devondre Campbell's hurt.
So what do we know about Tack's injury?
He announced today on Twitter, he said, "This sucks, So we don't know how the severity on Levitre, Tack, and Devondre is unknown and will probably be addressed Wednesday, according to the team. So
that's not good.
The problem also with the pass rush is we didn't get a lot of pressure on Cam. Grady Jarrett should have had maybe two more sacks. So it was pretty much like Grady Jarrett, Tack, and Poole got some
Brian
pressure.
Poole, yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't for Cam's elusiveness, Grady could have had 2 to 3 sacks in that game. I'm pretty convinced. But, you know, we just weren't getting a lot of pressure on him. And now if we lose, well, I think it's now our best pass rushers in Tack McKinley. I mean, that's a huge blow. You can't replace him.
Especially going up against Drew Brees this week.
Yeah, we really need Tack to play this week, because the Saints laid an egg offensively. You know they're going to come out, and we always know these fucking Saints-Falcons games are high-scoring affairs for the most part, and we need the defense to be able to come...
get a couple stops.
Yeah, do something. But I'm afraid with how they performed yesterday.
I mean, they got tired at the end.
The
way the Panthers play, where you have the option of Cam running, but also he just dumps it off to McCaffrey all the time. McCaffrey had over 100 yards receiving.
Right.
And then your defense is switching direction, and it's just going to wear them out.
Right.
So they looked good early on and then just kind of wore out by the fourth quarter.
Well, I think particularly with guys playing more than they're used to. You know, you have Duke Riley playing a position that he's not used to, a middle linebacker. You have KZ make the dumbass play of
yeah, that was atrocious.
Of hitting Cam as he's already slid, hits him helmet to helmet, gets ejected. So you got this guy, third string guy, Richards.
That was the guy I was talking about last week that I didn't remember his name.
That was the guy.
I knew he'd be a factor.
Yeah, he was. Didn't look great. So
he's just learning the defense.
Right. One guy I think the defense cannot afford to lose under any circumstances, Ricardo Allen. You cannot overstate his importance to the football team in terms of
he's a leader.
He's a leader. He's a signal caller in the secondary. And now I think, especially with Deion Jones being out, I think he's the leader of the overall defense at this point. And he had a big pick yesterday, which was tremendous. And his value, I think, overall the organization is beyond anything we can measure.
I'm hoping that Deion, he strikes me as one of those like freak athletes that can like recover a lot quicker. Kind of like Ronald Acuna this year, when it looked like he would have been out for like the season and he's back in
like a month,
10 days.
Right, or whatever it was. Yeah.
I'm hoping that we get a little bit of that from Deion.
That would be nice. I mean, he leaves a big void, man. I think KZ can pick up the slack, and hopefully he's had problems with targeting, though, so he needs to clean that shit up and get some more discipline around that. But good news is he dodged a suspension somehow, so he's not going to be suspended for the game against New Orleans, which is huge.
Oh, that's good.
Considering we've got to go up against Michael Thomas next week.
Yeah, but your boy Alford's been looking real good.
I think Alford looks great.
Trufant dropped the easiest interception of his life.
Yeah, I could have caught that.
What's up with these guys and dropping picks? I don't get it.
There's a reason why they're cornerbacks and not receivers.
But come on, man.
That was egregious. That was egregious.
But at least those two are still in place.
Yeah, they look fine. The secondary overall looks okay. I know they got, especially near the end there, there's that touchdown drive they went on where DJ Moore caught a ball and no one touched him for like 30 yards and he got in the end zone. And it was like, what the fuck just happened?
That was Duke Riley's big missed tackle.
Yeah.
Bounced off of him.
Mm-hmm.
Duke looked all right besides that.
He looked okay. He kind of reminded me a little bit of Worlo, tackling guys a little too, you know, a little further upfield than you'd like him to. But he had a respectable tackle number, and hopefully, you know, the talent's all there. And this is the time I think we're really going to see him being thrust in this position. I mean, he was already a starter, but being thrust in the middle linebacker position, we're going to learn a lot about him.
Apparently,
this time
what's Buddy's name, the linebacker from that we drafted this year from Yale?
Oh, Foye Luquin.
Apparently, he was on the field at the end of the game and not
Duke.
Yeah.
And Coach Quinn said, I think tonight on the radio, he does a little interview show at 7 on Mondays with a little plug here for 99 The Game, as if they need that. But with Wes Durham and Dave Arch interview Dan Quinn, it's just, you know, 2-on-1 interview, which is cool for like 30 minutes on Monday nights. And he was saying, Dan Quinn was saying pretty much just like, yeah, you'll see Duke out there, but yeah, you're also going to see Foye. They both bring different things to the table. You want to put them in positions where they can succeed in different scenarios that caters to their strengths. So, yeah, I think we will see them utilized like that. And another thing on this game I wanted to touch on is just, you know, the poise Matt Ryan showed was also with him, night and day. Accuracy on the passes was outstanding. That pass to Hooper was one of the prettiest throws I've seen him make before. In terms of where he put it exactly where it needed to be for his receiver to make the play.
Right.
There was no questioning anything he was doing in that game. That last rushing touchdown he had, out of this world good. Jumps into the arms of three Panthers defenders, takes them all down to score. That last rushing touchdown, the 8-yard run.
He looked like Cam Newton on that one.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, that got you fired up. If that doesn't get you fired up, you're not alive.
So you back on the Matt Ryan train?
I was always on the Matt Ryan train. I was just upset with the effort on, it wasn't like I was putting Matt Ryan in the same place, you know, I was putting Sark. Just because Matt has consistently proven over the course of his career that he's your guy.
Right.
Sark, on the other hand, is not. And also, I think, one of the things I was thinking about a lot before the game started was, you know, there's all this talk about who's to blame for the offense's regression. And once again, take this with a grain of salt because these were thoughts before the game. So, you know, who's to blame for this offensive regression? I was like, you know what really the big difference I see is that it's pretty much the same personnel outside of Chris Chester being your right guard on the Super Bowl team and Taylor Gabriel. So, and the biggest, you know, addition is Sark and the biggest loss Shanahan. So, I mean, you got to put blame around, but the biggest blame to me went to Sark.
Like you said, though, that was before that game.
Right.
And also, I still think the most important thing to remember is that we hated Shanahan after year one.
Right.
Year two, it took off.
Yeah. And this this looked like...
It's a good sign.
Yeah. This also looked a lot like the Shanny offense. It was just... You just felt comfortable with that offense the whole time. The fluidity in which the play calls were coming, the diversity in the play calling, tremendous. So hopefully you can... You know, keep that going into this week three game against New Orleans.
You know who I want to call out, Graham?
Who's that?
Falcons fans.
Hmm.
Did you see everyone leave the stadium?
With 4 minutes left?
Yeah.
You know what? Actually,
what is wrong with people?
I don't know. It was silly. I know it was a 2-touchdown lead at that point, but
why is everyone obsessed with beating traffic?
Yeah, it's like,
it's not that bad.
No, it's not.
Drink a beer in the parking lot after
right.
the game.
Or go to the Taco Mac, you know, near... Right next to Phillips Arena.
Yeah. CNN Center.
Right, CNN Center.
There's places to wait it out.
Yeah, Dantana's.
It's Sunday afternoon. What the hell do you got to get home for?
Right, it's silly. And you know what was nice, too? I know when the game started, of course, you had True to Atlanta, some empty seats. But in, like, the second and third quarter, I was like, yeah, it's a pretty full-looking stadium, at least on the ground. And then, yeah, it's like when they scored that touchdown near the end of the Panthers, and you see the extra point, and it's like, half empty behind the field goal. I was
it's
like,
a one score
hell?
Game.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
That game should have gone to overtime.
It really should have. And
was that Campbell the like just completely missed batting that ball down?
I think it went over his fingers.
Nah.
No, it wasn't Campbell. Campbell was out by that point. I think it was Duke. I can't remember. But
it's one of those things we should look up, but we're not gonna.
No, we're not. Yeah. And the scary part was, is like the way the shot was composed on.
No, DJ Moore should have caught that ball.
It looked like it was in his hands.
Yeah.
And it looked like he caught it. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to fucking overtime.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah, we dodged a bullet.
Big win.
Big win. You're hoping that the. And honestly, the Panthers dropped a lot of balls. That could have been a bit of a different game if they hadn't dropped so many balls. They did. Cam actually had one of his better games he's had against us. I think he threw for like 335 yards or something. Of course, you know, did his thing on the ground. We once again aren't great at covering running backs out of the flat. You know, McCaffrey, like you mentioned, over 100 yards. I think he had 10 receptions. We didn't let him bust one, though, which
was
nice.
That dude's good, though.
Yeah, he's good.
He's just unbelievably shifty.
Yeah, we didn't let him bust one. So that wasn't like some big reception for like 40 yards or anything like that where he made five people miss. You know, we were making open field tackles really effectively. So that was good. But I think that brings us into this next game against the Saints. And coming into it, these games are always crazy. Either, you know, like the Thursday night game was kind of low scoring, but there were a lot of turnovers, freak injury to Kamara. But for the most part, if you're a longtime Falcons fan, you know that these games are normally shootouts. And I wonder what we can expect with this game, Adam.
A lot of stress.
Yeah.
A lot of anxiety.
I think we're both going to have to be blackout drunk during it because Adam and I are actually going to the game on Sunday. We're going to the Saints game. I actually have never been to a Falcons-Saints game, so I'm really excited. I've been to plenty of Falcons games over the course of my life. I've never been to Falcons-Saints, so.
This will be my first Falcons game at the Benz.
Mm.
So that'll be exciting.
Yeah, I can't remember where we're sitting, but I think we're behind the we're in the end zone in the upper deck. So should have a good view of the field, like straight behind it.
Sure.
We're not in like a corner like we were when we had those season tickets to the Georgia Dome.
Yeah.
So should be good.
A lot of offense.
Yep. You know, it was encouraging to see the offense play as well as they did. We know that the Saints were torn up in week one against Tampa Bay to apparently the MVP of the league, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who also had an insane game against Philadelphia, just absolutely torched them. I think he has 10 touchdowns already and through two games, and he looks like freaking Aaron Rodgers out there slinging the ball around.
Yeah, Tampa Bay might actually be something for us to be concerned about.
Mm.
I'm just hoping that they're very stubborn and feel the need to put their franchise quarterback.
Sure, quote unquote.
And once he's done with his little suspension for... This was the Uber driver
yeah.
one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love how he gets... three-game for suspension for that, but other people who, like, smoke weed or whatever get, like, a four-game suspension. Yeah. Sexual assault versus weed.
It's a little backwards.
Fucking ridiculous. Anyway, not to get into that whole discussion.
Right.
But, yeah, it will be interesting to see when his suspension is up. Will they bring him back, or will they continue to ride the hot hand? I mean Fitzpatrick looks tremendous out there.
Beating the Saints and now the Eagles.
Back-to-back.
And then I think they've got the Bears, I think I heard.
Yeah, I'm not sure who they're playing next.
I mean, yeah, if they're 2-1 or 3-0.
But their defense looks a lot better as well. We talked about how you know, they've revitalized their defensive line a little bit, signing Jason Pierre-Paul, Vita Vea up there, their rookie defensive tackle. Defense looks a little more formidable with that front four. Of course, you got Gerald McCoy, who we've known for a while being a terror up there, but now he's got some support. And that defense looks better. Mike Evans is a monster, as we all know. DeSean Jackson looks healthy.
Yeah, he's back.
He had a huge touchdown again yesterday where he made like three or four guys miss.
Got a quarterback that can get the ball to him.
Yeah, I mean, Fitzpatrick looks like he's just drunk out there playing backyard football. But he's drunk in the sense that it's made him better. He's got a fucking edge. He's just slinging it with reckless abandon, but it's finding guys. And Tampa Bay, you know, the 1 year that everybody's not talking about them is the 1 year they've shown up so far this season. I know it's only two games, but...
Yeah, it's still early to know who anyone is, like the Saints included.
Sure.
Getting killed by Tampa Bay and then barely beating the Browns. Who knows? Their defense looks like it's regressed again, which is great news.
Which you called out. And also the Browns don't have the best offense in the world. I think Tyrod Taylor...
He's capable.
He's capable, but it's not...
Which is more than the Browns have had in the past.
Right. It's just kind of like, you know, if you're giving up that 60-yard bomb that they gave up to Tyrod Taylor at the end of the game to tie it, you know, imagine what Matt Ryan can do against the offense. And Matt knows that defense, and I think he can pick him apart. And I think Julio, you know, usually when Julio has a quiet game, he comes back with a big game. So we can look for that. I think we can also look for Ridley to continue to contribute. Tevin Coleman, I think, is going to feast. On the other side, though, I think without Keanu Neal and Deion Jones, I think Alvin Kamara is going to have a monster game. He was held in check by the Browns, surprisingly, last week. No touchdowns, but they're going to target him a ton out of the backfield. Drew Brees loves to give him opportunities to make plays in space, and he's a lot better than Christian McCaffrey. No disrespect to McCaffrey, but Kamara is like on another level, and so we've got to be concerned about him.
Who do you put on Kamara?
It's tough. You know, if Deion Jones was here, obviously Deion Jones, but now I'm not sure. I think, you know, you'd like to say Devondre Campbell, but you don't know the severity of his injury.
Right.
So if Devondre's out, obviously Deion's
Vic
out.
Vic might have to be a linebacker again, man.
He might be. He's not doing much pass rushing, so I don't know. You got to have someone who's fast who can hang with him and still make the open field tackle, and it's tough to know, especially in the linebacking core right now, who's going to be able to do that. I think a lot of it's, you know, unfortunately going to fall on the shoulders of Duke Riley. And because I know Campbell was kind of on McCaffrey, and it looked like they were trading off. Like sometimes Rico was up there making plays on him. So we'll see how Dan Quinn wants to attack him. But it might have to be a team effort in terms of keeping tabs on that guy. I think the other guy we got to worry about is Michael Thomas. Two touchdowns in the game against the Browns. I think he had another touchdown in the Bucs game. Big-time receiver. I'd say he's the second-best receiver in the division behind Julio. even though our secondary has looked really good so far this year. Got to respect that guy.
I mean, you know, let's just don't think you can just put Trufant on him and hope for the best.
No, I think, you know what? I've been more impressed with Alford's coverage this year than True's, to be honest. I think Alford's been really shut down. I wouldn't mind saying, you know, Rocky, go out and cover this man.
See how it goes.
See how it goes.
Because they do have other weapons to worry about.
Right. You got Ted Ginn. You know, he can beat you deep.
Has he been in the league for like 15 years?
He's been playing for a long time. I think since like 06 or something like that, 08. Of course, we all know about 47-year-old Drew Brees, the man who drinks from the fountain of youth. You know, he could certainly tear us up as well.
Yeah, I think we got to score more than the 31 we put up this week.
Yeah, I think we got to get 38. We need to really.
But I feel good about our offense coming into this one now.
I do too.
All of a sudden, things have flip flop.
So you hope that can continue against a defense that hasn't really shown you that much this year in the Saints, and that we can eke out a victory.
Have I mentioned I was impressed with the balance of the offense, Graham?
Yes.
Okay. Spreading it out to the receivers.
Spreading out the receivers.
Sure.
But yeah, I think another thing to keep your eyes on this week is injuries. You know, is Levitre going to be out? Is Devondre going to be out? Is Tack out, more importantly? Because we know getting pressure on Drew Brees always helps, but it's tough to do that. He's a very hard guy to sack, even at his age. So if you lose Tack, man, we're looking at an uphill battle there.
This is a perfect example of why draft picks are so important. For like when you were talking about trading all those draft picks for what's his face from the Raiders,
Khalil Mack.
Yeah, I mean, injuries like this happening, so you have to have that depth.
Sure.
So these young bucks are gonna have to step in real quick.
Indeed.
Learn on the job.
Yep. But yeah, we don't have to play the prediction game. Shootout for sure. If the game is under, you know, 40 points or something like that, I'll be shocked. Like a total combined score.
Oh, yeah.
I'm totally shocked. Not anything else for you on the Falcons?
I think we pretty much covered it, Graham.
I'd agree. All right, let's transition now to your Atlanta Braves. Braves are still in first place in the NL East. 6.5 game lead on the Phillies. Any number of Braves wins and Phillies losses that equates to 8 captures a division title for the Braves.
We're pretty sabermetric heavy guys over here. I'm sure any users know about Magic Number.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the original sabermetric. Yeah, we're in good shape, Graham.
Yeah, so after that...
Here's my question, though, on the Magic Number. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can help me crunch some numbers here. What needs to happen for the Braves to have a chance to clinch on Friday when we're at the game? Think that's feasible?
We need to sweep this series. The Cardinals would need to...
So, say we win we win 3 in a row through Wednesday.
Right.
And the Phillies win 3 in a row, then the magic number's down to 2.
No, but they lose.
If they lose 3 in a row.
Yeah.
Then it's down to 2.
Yeah, so we definitely could. They could clinch the game that we go to on Friday night.
So
if that at all, and we have to win the game Thursday against them, and we have to win on Friday.
Oh, not necessarily. No, if it can get to 2.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah. We're playing the Phillies.
Sure.
Sabermetrics.
Yep. Well, no, but I understand what you're trying to say.
Right.
Yeah. So it's possible. Unfortunately, after that great West Coast road trip, we won 6-7. Came back home, lost 2 of 3 to the Nationals. Although I will say this, scoring 6 runs off Max Scherzer on that Friday night game.
Dude, I don't know why they keep pitching Scherzer against us. Like,
we own his ass for some reason. Yeah, we seem to have dominated him this year. And we chased him after 4 innings, gave up 6 runs. Fucking Ronald Acuna Jr., 4 hits off of...
First 4-hit game.
The top 3 pitcher in baseball. What a way to do it.
That kid is so good, man.
What a way to get your first 4-hit game against one of the best pitchers in the game.
It was Saturday morning. I was at work and just watching the full highlights from that game because I think I missed a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. And it was Acuna's triple.
Yeah.
In that game. And just him like sliding head first into third. And then just so much pure joy.
Right.
On that kid's face. Like he gets up so excited. I literally... almost had a tear roll down.
Got emotional.
I did.
That's good.
I love that kid.
No, he's infectious. His energy is infectious. He's a tremendous talent. And him and Ozzy just brought a whole new dynamic to the ball club, I think, with their attitude and the way they go about carrying themselves. And they don't you know, I'm tired of some people sounding off on Twitter and whatnot saying, oh, they need to show more respect for the game or they need to be more understated. It's like, fuck that, man. It's not like they're being assholes. It's not like they're, you know, being bad sports. They're just pumped up.
Yeah.
They're just playing the game how they feel like they need to play it to really enjoy it. And they are enjoying themselves. And their passion radiates when they do express themselves. And it's just for their love of the game. It's not to be an asshole. It's not to disrespect anybody. It's for the love of the game. And wasn't that the fucking saying of baseball in the 90s when they make all those commercials? Love of the game.
For the love of the game.
For the love of the game. And that's exactly what they're doing.
I mean, they're 20-year-old kids. They're having fun.
Yeah.
I was watching, they were showing them in the dugout, Ozzy and Acuna, and they were just, like, bullshitting around like 20-year-olds did, probably talking about shit jokes or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's, like, 35, 36-year-old Anibal Sanchez right next to them giggling along as well. So, you know, the whole team loves them.
Yeah. No, it's great. The team has great chemistry, and I think they're a big, big part of that. And they're also, one thing that I was also thinking about recently was how we were kind of carried by these two guys overall through both halves of the season. Ozzy kind of carried us, you know, from a young player's perspective in the first half of the season. Not as much as Acuna is doing now. Obviously, Freddie and Nick Markakis were also having tremendous first halves, but the production we got out of Ozzy Albies was incredibly unexpected, especially in terms of the power in the first half. I know that sagged in the second half of the season. But he was an instrumental part in us achieving the success we had. And now in the second half, it's been Acuna's turn ever since he went to the top of the order to do that in an even greater effect. So I love how these two guys have – it's been a tale of two halves of the season with two of our youngest players that have transcended us to the top of the NL East.
Yeah, quicker than we thought we would be there.
Right. No one predicted, even with everyone saying Acuna's the best thing since sliced bread, no projections were saying he was going to do what he's doing right now. 18 homers since the All-Star break is the most in baseball.
Yeah, that's wild, man.
You think about that. 25 home runs he has this year, and I think he's just played 100 games. If he played a full season, he's hitting 45 bombs if he's playing at this clip. Still, it was frustrating to see us drop those last two of the Nationals. The
pitching's coming off a six-game
right
winning streak.
Sure. But the pitching. I sound like Chris Berman there. Yeah, well, TJ, you know. But the pitching staff, again, struggled in the Saturday and Sunday
games. Even our Wayne Gausman was a little off.
Yeah, he wasn't sharp. I think he gave up four runs. But he battled enough to keep us in the game. He's also bailed out by the offense, unfortunately.
But Nuke again, man.
Nuke did not.
We're back good. Off the Nuke train, I think.
Well, yeah, three innings, gave up five runs. Julio looked bad. I think he had six walks.
He only gave up like two runs, but six walks.
Six walks is bad. And
I'll agree with you on that, Graham.
According to Brad Rowland, who's one of the better all-around sports personalities. I don't know if you class. Yeah, he's a media guy. I think he's one of the better media guys.
He's a reporter.
He's a reporter. He's a journalist.
Yes.
one of the better journalists, I think, that covers Atlanta sports.
Like us.
Yeah, well, much better than us. And we're not actually journalists.
Sure we are.
We don't write anything. I write a show description.
That's about it. We mainly just recite what journalists say.
Right. Or
and we have our own observations.
Sure. He had a telling stat today that out of 67 qualified pitchers, Julio Teheran is dead last in walk rate this year. He has the highest walk rate out of any starting pitcher.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, it's awful. And now you get down to, you know,
we're going to do our weekly
why not
playoff rotation.
Playoff rotation.
All right. I'm firm in my decision now.
All right, firm.
Firm, Folty 1.
Firm as a cucumber.
Yes. Gausman 2.
All right.
Anibal, Teheran. Still Teheran, man. He's got more experience.
I guess. I just worry also about his ERA being like in the sevens or whatever it is in the first inning. He could end the game before it even gets started with how shit he is in the first inning. Scary, but also
is that really his ERA in the first inning?
Like that,
did you make that up?
No. That is true.
Hmm.
But Newcomb hasn't done anything to really warrant consideration right now, unless, like I said, if you're pitching on the West Coast,
that's your guy.
That could be your guy, maybe, because he obviously doesn't pitch very well in the humidity. Folty is also struggling in the humidity tonight, and he's had times when he's done that during the season. luckily, you know, when it's time for October baseball, it gets a little cooler here in Atlanta. However, it's still...
Well, we've got global warming going on now. Sure. So who knows? Yeah. Could still be 95.
It could still be. You know, I mean, I feel like Atlanta is really trying to heat up as September goes along. I feel like some of these days of this month have been hotter than August days. But coming back to the point, I'm still of the mindset, Folty won, and you evaluate the rest of the way. You evaluate who you're going to play, how they match up, and where the game's being played. You evaluate the splits, you evaluate the advanced sabermetrics, you evaluate anything you possibly can.
Are you officially off Tukey, though?
I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, so I kind of have to be.
Okay.
Just because I don't think there's going to be, you know, there's probably no way they're going to say, like Kevin McAlpin told me on Twitter today when he put me in my place, he's like, yeah, you really think you're going to give a kid who's got four professional starts at the big leagues playoff rotation spot?
Yeah, you want to talk about people shitting on Snitker if he makes that decision and then Tukey gets shelled.
Right.
Can't tell me people would be like, oh, no, that was fun.
Right. I just love his stuff so much. I think he's got better stuff than Julio and Newcomb does. But also, he's not immune to giving up a lot of walks, as we saw in that Arizona right. game. So right. it's tough to know who your four is. And maybe, you know, one thing also against Newcomb is his inability to pitch well on 5 days rest. So he doesn't do well. Is a much better ERA, much better whip, better strikeout rate when he goes with 6 days. So you're going to really ask him if he's your – if you're considering him for three or four, you're really going to ask him to pitch on shorter rest than what he normally thrives in.
No, I mean –
and I don't think you can do that.
Well, in theory, I'm sure he would get 6 days from the end of the season to game three or four.
Yeah, but it's just like after –
his only start of the series.
Exactly, but then it's like after that, then what do you do? Then what if he goes out there and
then
throws?
Then you pitch him in the NLCS one game. Then you pitch him in the World Series one game.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you can't even talk about that shit at this point. I can't imagine winning a playoff series at him. It's been so long, I almost forgot what
I don't
it
think
feels
I,
like.
I think I'm going to be too nervous to watch playoff baseball.
We're going to games, so you got to watch it.
Not necessarily.
Is you going to go there and what, just watch football or something
yeah.
at the Chop House?
And just take in the environment.
That's silly.
It goes back to Hugo's question of, do I actually watch Atlanta sports?
Yeah, that's a fair question, I guess, after that assessment.
Yeah.
But
it's just going to be very nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah. No, it'll be...
I mean, it's been since 2013.
Right.
Since I watched the Braves playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not even there yet. We could still blow this.
Oh, game. We definitely could. I mean, we are Atlanta. If anything... I saw some people also bitching about, like, on Twitter. It's like, why is everyone being so negative? We had this huge lead in the division. We got, you know, a week or two left in the season. Why is everyone freaking out? And it's like, have you lived here before? Have you watched this team beyond this season? Have you been a part of the Atlanta sports experience across all the teams?
I do think Twitter's just gotten out of control, though.
Oh, it has. Everybody's got their own hot take, and most of the time they're full of shit.
Everyone's trying to be...
us included.
Everyone's trying to be a top sports Atlanta sports podcast.
Right.
Not everyone can do it.
Not everyone can do it. Not everyone's up to the challenge.
Right. But yeah, it's just all constant negativity, bitching, moaning. No one ever says just, hey, good job, guys.
Right.
We're in a good position.
Yeah. There's some people that do that, but for the most part, you're right. Yeah, it's like the trolls sort of infect Twitter and kind of can bring down the experience for others. Mm-hmm. This week, the Cardinals come in for a 3-game set. Currently, as of this recording, we're down 4-2 to them. And then the Phillies. They come to town after that for a 4-game set. So after that, it's the Mets and then the Phillies again to close out the year. This is it. There's only 7, 10, 13 games left.
Mm. It's like 2 weeks worth, Graham.
Yep.
Getting down to the nitty-gritty here. I'm talking about the Braves for a lot.
Yeah. It's been a really fun season, though. I've had a lot more fun with this team than I think I've had since probably the 2012 season, just because it was Chippers last year, and that was a magical run. And I thought a magical team that unfortunately got bounced before they should have due to some really shitty circumstances. But, you know.
We're certainly due for something to go our way.
Yeah, no shit.
I'm just so worried that these walks from both the starters and the bullpen are going to come back to bite us in the ass.
I have no faith in the pitching staff going into this. Sorry to be negative again, but it's really hard to feel like we have a legitimate shot at anything because of the struggles of particularly the bullpen to me. And the offense has waned a little bit too. I mean, even though you still have faith in them, they're not doing what they were doing in the early parts of July and August. But you still got to respect them. Like the offense is the least of my concerns right now. Right now, it's like, can the bullpen save games effectively?
Did you see your boy Viz pitch Saturday?
Oh, did he? He's back.
He looked solid, man.
That's good.
He had a clean ninth inning.
Excellent.
He only threw like 8 pitches to get out of it,
too. Yeah, I missed the Saturday game, so.
So, I mean, that's big if he can come back. Because, he was our closer for most of the year.
Right. So that's good, too. He's
kind of underrated that he was gone.
Yeah, he's been on the shelf for most of the year. So it's good to get him back. That'll give us a boost and eat up some innings. Otherwise, that would have to go to some of our other better pitchers.
Like Sam Freeman,
our boy. But, yeah, it's just tough to think that we're going to win a playoff series with this bullpen. And or even the rotation has been a lot better recently. You know, they're starting to pick up on their walks now. And it's really the bullpen for me. It makes me feel like we don't have a chance, unfortunately, because you can only, like that Diamondback series, even though we won it, and it was a huge series, and it's catapulted us into this position, the bullpen was freaking awful, and you're not going to be, and the Diamondback's bullpen's awful, and you're not going to be able to rely on the offense playing these last second heroics all the fucking time. It's like, eventually, you got to be able to go out there, get a lead, and hold it. And can the bullpen do that? When it really counts.
They've done more times than not. We're on pace to win 90 games.
Yeah, but it hasn't just been them shutting people down. It's like the offense has constantly played hero in these late-game scenarios. Like you said, so many of our players perform better in the seventh inning on, which is awesome. But sooner or later, that shit runs out. And sooner or later, it doesn't work. And sooner or later, your bullpen's got to come through for you. And they haven't come through for us in a long time in terms of being just like, give me a clean inning. Like, very few people give us, like, clean innings. Or they always, like, there's always a leadoff walk. There's always a leadoff hit. I know he did. I know, that's great.
I don't appreciate these statements you're making.
But can't you agree that consistency has sucked for the bullpen recently? Fucking 5-6 ERA going back to, like, middle of August.
Is that true?
Yeah. At least as of the Diamondbacks series, that was the case. They've been shit. And
we'll see, Graham.
It just makes me worry about the playoffs if we're lucky enough to get there. So
it's like first world problems for us now.
That's true.
Worrying about the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like, we're worrying about how a bullpen's going to do in the playoffs. While
I thought we were going to win like 75 games this
year. Right, exactly. But that doesn't give you cause for concern, this recent performance?
I just said that was my concern.
Okay, but you're acting like...
You just took your statements a little too far.
All right, that's fair.
Eventually, you got to have a shutdown inning. We've obviously had plenty of shutdown innings if we're in the position.
Few and fucking far between recently.
Well,
can't deny
is that how you want to end this podcast, Graham?
Not really.
Down note?
Well, Adam, I think considering what's happening in the Braves game, we're down 6-2. Every time we look up at the television, Fulte's either giving up a home run or a deep fly ball off the brick in right field over Nick Markakis' head. I say yes. I think we ended on a depressing note. We start high and low.
They switched it up on us this week. Last week, the Falcons were the depressing segment. Now the Braves are turning into the depressing segment.
Yep.
So, they keep us guessing.
Right. And at least they're not both depressing in the same week.
Right.
At least that counts for something. And it should be fun this weekend, man. We're going to the Braves game on Friday, going to the Falcons game on Sunday, so we're getting our Atlanta sports in this weekend.
Yep. It'll be very fair.
Very fair indeed.
Hopefully we'll have something to talk about come next week.
Yes. I would hope so.
But also, how's your mental health?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's move on to that. Actually, yeah, we can talk about that for a minute, I think.
You seemed a lot happier watching the Falcons game.
I think
you seemed a lot more.
I gathered myself better, prepared a little better. I think when I was going to the Falcons game last week, I was of the mindset, I'm going to drink a lot, I'm going to go ape shit, I'm going to watch Falcons, I'm just going to go crazy, and I'm going to be really into the game to the point where anyone and everyone can fuck off, and I just want to watch. I probably should have just watched it alone if that was my attitude.
Right.
I wanted to be with people and watch it, but I was just like in rabid,
but you also didn't
rabid fan mode to the point of just being just a total prick. This week, I said, you know what? We're down Deion. We're down Keanu. I don't know how the offense is going to be. We're going to watch the game with friends. It's just a fucking game. You're just going to have fun and support your team. And that's really all you can say. And just don't let it get to where it got last week. So I think overall, I thought I did, you know, better. I had a couple of moments where I freaked out, particularly the Matt Ryan last rushing touchdown. I went ape shit.
Well, that's a good freak
out. That was a good freak out. And then, you know, when we started to give the game away at the end, I started to get a little upset, but I wasn't like calling everyone a motherfucker every 2 seconds.
You weren't. If anything, I thought I was getting a little more upset than you at times.
You were.
Trufant's dropped interception. Yeah, you really upset me.
Yeah. I was like, oh, well, at least he deflected the pass. You're like, no, bullshit.
Because I scored a touchdown after that. That always happens.
Right. And of course. So,
but that, I'm proud of you, Graham. I think you made good strides.
No, I thought that last discussion last week was really good. It really made me, you know, it was like a mini intervention. It was a reality check. It made me do some thinking.
There's probably going to be a massive relapse after this Saints game.
Oh, well,
going there in
when
person.
When I go to the game,
it's just me and you though. You don't have anything to worry about there,
right? I'm still going to try to take the lessons I've learned it to heart, though, and try to apply them across all aspects of watching sports. Because I had a much better time watching that game. Like even if we had lost that game, it would have been awful. I don't think I would have. I don't know what I would have done, honestly. But I was trying to just.
But you had
keep moments, myself contained.
Moments of entertainment.
Moments of entertainment, and still be invested in games. Still freak out if you have to, but just don't go over the board to the point where you're an asshole. And I think I accomplished that this week. We'll have to do an asshole win-loss counter for the whole season with the Falcons. Right now, at the Falcons, I'm 1-1. But I think even if the Falcons lose, I can still come out with a win in terms of how I carry myself. So,
and you know, Graham, that's a great moral to this whole story. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. It's pretty simple. You can pontificate and introspect all you want, but that's the bottom line. Don't be an asshole.
When you're acting like that, you're being a selfish asshole. It's about you.
Right.
It's not about the team or the city or the people around you. I'm not talking just about you now. I'm just talking about
anybody.
People in general.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
I'm not calling you an asshole.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're an asshole.
Right. But right now.
But in general, you're not an asshole.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. But
it's a good mental health recap.
Yeah. No, I think we're on the up and up here. I'm kind of like Sark. Yeah. Kind of like Stark. I was in the deep well of depression, and now I'm feeling pretty good.
I mean, it's also pretty safe to say that as Sark goes, you will go as well.
Yeah, potentially. But like I said, I'm going to do my best to try and remain a model citizen as much as I can. And I thought it was interesting this week that Sark clapped back at the media, you know, where he was like, you know, calling Kurt Warner out for saying, it's like, it wasn't just the same zone, you prick. It was, they were bracketing Julio or whatever. But thanks, Coach Warner. You know, he's getting feisty.
I like that. Don't just be a puppet.
Right. I mean, part of me liked it because he had some fire. And he actually broke down some things on the Falcons, like, website. And it was like, yeah, this is how we got beat here. This block wasn't held up. I made a bad call, or someone made a bad throw, or Matt made a bad throw.
It probably helps for him to do something like that and show that, hey, I actually know something about football, you dumbasses.
Right, and it's got to be a little therapeutic, too. At the same time, it kind of comes across as, you know, when I read the article, I was just kind of like, well, we got beat. Why can't we – what can we do not to get beat? You know, you're not saying anything like, I mean, you're mentioning in retrospect, but why not in the moment? Why can't we do anything? You know, I was kind of pissed off when I read that, but I also kind of liked it too, because he was able to come out and defend himself and wasn't just being, you know, so many times you don't have access, you know, the media doesn't have access to the coordinators during the season. That was kind of nice for him to come out and say his piece. And then he backed up, you know, he put up, and then he shut us up this week with an outstanding game plan. So, you know,
Team Sark.
Hats off to him. Hopefully he carries it forward. Well, thank you all for listening. I think that wraps up today's episode of Atlanta Zone. Until next time, rise up, shop on, stand brotherhood, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitamisit.
Hospitamisit.